Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Managing Up by Harvard Business Review, narrated by James Edward Thomas. Publisher's note: this audiobook has bonus material. Please contact whomever you purchased this audiobook from to request the material.
What is managing up? When you ask a friend how her job is going, she says, "Once I started managing up, things got a lot better." You cringe, thinking managing up smacks of political maneuvering, cozying up to the boss, or even outright manipulation. Fortunately, when it's done right, managing up isn't any of those things. It can be a delicate business, no doubt, but it needn't involve power plays on the one hand or kowtowing on the other. Managing up is simply a conscious approach to working with your supervisor toward goals you both care about. The aim is to achieve a mutually beneficial relationship. This book gives you tips on how to do that. What managing up involves. Even though you're not the person in charge, you'll need to set a positive, productive tone for your relationship with your boss, and that requires certain skills. Knowing yourself and your manager well. Managing expectations on both sides. Listening with a keen ear. Communicating in a clear, authentic voice. Negotiating with diplomacy. Monitoring the relationship as it progresses. Making necessary refinements. You may be thinking, why not sit back and let my boss handle all this? Isn't the manager supposed to be the one who manages? But standing high and mighty on that principle doesn't help anyone. Besides, you'll miss out on the benefits of managing up, which you'll read about next. Why managing up is useful. Managing up helps you obtain the resources and buy-in you need to do your best work for your boss and your company. You, your manager, and your organization are interdependent. Only by recognizing that fact can you cultivate a strong, trusting relationship that allows you to get things done. You and your manager will then feel secure as you work together to solve problems rather than just talking about them, ignoring them, or sweeping them under the rug. And you will both feel more satisfied at work. Consider this example. Sam, a new director with a formal work style, replaced someone who had a looser, more intuitive approach. Carla, one of his direct reports, knew the importance of managing up. When she asked Sam how he preferred to receive information and updates, he said he liked reviewing reports before discussing them because it kept meetings structured and brief. So before her meetings with Sam, she sent him background data and discussion agendas. The result? Highly productive meetings and innovative problem-solving that improved the entire team's performance. Sam's transition was smooth, and he and Carla quickly developed a friendly, efficient working relationship. Contrast Carla's experience with that of Larry, another of Sam's direct reports. Larry found Sam's style too controlling. He was not especially interested in managing up or learning what Sam valued, so he didn't ask for direction. He seldom provided background information before meetings and often felt blindsided by Sam's questions when they sat down to talk. Consequently, Sam's meetings with Larry lasted longer and accomplished less than those with Carla. Sam found them frustrating, and he attributed delays on projects to Larry's inefficiency. So Sam gave Larry negative performance reviews and didn't put him forward for promotions. Carla's efforts at managing up clearly benefited everyone involved, Sam, her team, and herself. But failing to manage up means more than simply missing out on benefits. It can be a risky proposition, as Larry's case illustrates. Refusing to learn about and accommodate your manager's preferences can lead to misunderstandings about your skills and your dedication to your work. Tuning in to your manager, however, is only part of what it takes to avoid problems like Larry's and reap rewards like Carla's. You must also know yourself and navigate the differences between the two of you. That's what we'll cover next. Knowing your manager and yourself. Managing up is a constant process. It takes keen observation and a willingness to adjust your behavior on a daily basis. But once you and your boss have built a trusting relationship on a solid foundation, cultivating it becomes easier and less time-intensive. The first step in getting to that happy place is identifying where you and your boss stand, both professionally and personally. Roles. Beyond your obligations to each other, you and your manager have specific roles to play and people to whom you're accountable. In short, you each have a web of complex relationships to maintain and responsibilities to fulfill. Acknowledging those realities can help you see the world from your boss's point of view. It's also essential to understand your manager's priorities and pressures, and to map them against your own. Locate points of overlap and those of potential conflict, perhaps by marking them on an organizational chart. The visual evidence can expose hidden risks and opportunities in collaborating with your manager. For example, look for chances to support your boss in work she's doing for her own manager. Ask how you can help and suggest ideas of your own. Suppose, for instance, she could use an extra set of hands on an exciting project with a tight deadline. Propose taking on certain tasks that complement your skills and interests. You'll get to participate in higher-level work. Your boss will get more done. And throughout the project, you'll be showing, not just telling her, that your goals and hers go hand in hand. Of course, differences in power can make some subordinates, especially those who are themselves managers, react in unhealthy ways. Management experts John Gabarro and John Cotter highlight two problematic responses to a boss's authority. Counter-dependency, when you unconsciously resent your boss, perhaps even see her as an institutional enemy. Counter-dependent subordinates may start arguments, especially with authoritarian bosses, just for the sake of fighting. Dependency, when you swallow objections or anger and comply even when your boss makes a poor decision. Dependent subordinates stew rather than express honest opinions. If you recognize a bit of yourself in either of these profiles, consider how your natural reaction to authority in general may be damaging your relationship with your boss. Then think about ways to respond more constructively, as in the previous example, where offering to help your boss leads to a more efficient division of labor and the chance to contribute to a desirable project. Strengths and weaknesses. Once you know your manager's strengths, you can find ways of working together that bring out the best in both of you. You can also appreciate how she's using those strengths to support team and company goals and tactfully promote those accomplishments to others in the organization. Bosses appreciate and often reciprocate that kind of advocacy. Though you may have a pretty clear idea of what makes you a good employee, pinpointing your manager's strengths can be tougher to do. You'll certainly want to observe her as she pursues objectives and interacts with others. You can also get valuable insights by talking with coworkers who know your boss better than you do, especially if you've just started reporting to her. Having done that bit of informal research, list your manager's strengths alongside your own and note the similarities and differences. Points of overlap, say you're both analytical and data-driven, can spark camaraderie and strengthen your relationship. Differences needn't be seen as problems. They can signal opportunities to complement your manager. You may at times bemoan your boss's shortcomings or even feel thwarted by them, but that's a prescription for frustration. Instead, think of recognizing her weaknesses as an important step toward achieving your common goals. Figure out where your manager needs assistance and step up to offer it. For example, if your manager has a tough time meeting deadlines, identify the obstacles that typically stand in the way. Offer to tackle those tasks for her if they're in your purview, or to perform a supporting role if they're not. Even a friendly reminder a week or so ahead of a deadline can go a long way. A collegial in-person nudge is more likely to prompt action than a sterile ping on an electronic calendar. Zero in on your own weaknesses as well. To develop an effective partnership, you need to know when to lean on your manager, not just when she can lean on you. If your weaknesses and hers overlap in some areas, those may be points of friendly commiseration on an emotional level. On a practical level, they may reveal where the two of you need outside support. Work styles. As Carla did in our earlier example, ask your manager how she likes and does not like to operate. It's important to know her general preferences. Stop by my office rather than sending me email. And to scope out specifics. Updates on this project should come to me every Thursday by noon. Your boss may not think to articulate her overall style or her day-to-day approach to getting things done, assuming they're obvious. But chances are she also won't mind answering a few thoughtful questions about how she likes to work. Table 1 lists some questions you might try and related actions you can take. The fact that you're asking demonstrates your interest in efficiency, your capacity for foresight, and your attentiveness as a direct report. As presumptuous as it may seem, it's also important to clarify your own work style with your manager in the interest of practicality and transparency. But don't forget the power difference discussed earlier. Show a willingness to modify your own approach to arrive at a mutually suitable style of interaction with your boss. In leading by example, you may find that your manager extends the accommodation in the other direction, adjusting her practices a bit to suit what matters most to you. Motivators. At every employee's core, from entry-level worker to CEO, are the things that drive her to do good work. Identifying what motivates your boss is a key component of managing up. Sometimes it's easy. For example, if your manager is driven by a desire to trim costs, she has probably shared that publicly. You might support that aim by streamlining redundancies in processes or systems that you oversee. But some motivators run deeper. Perhaps your manager is a big-picture person, inspired by vision, and prefers to leave details to team members like you. In that case, don't dive into minutiae when you give her updates. Briefly sum up what you've done and explicitly state how it supports her overall goals. By contrast, if your manager craves specifics, you might choose an illustrative example as a cross-section of your work. You'll engage her with the intricacy of what you're doing rather than boring her with the broad spectrum of your tasks. Similarly, during check-ins with your manager, talk about what motivates you. That equips her to make engaging assignments and connect you with people in her network who will inspire you. Report back to your manager when you find a specific project exciting. Make it easy for her to give you the kind of work that makes you tick. Managing expectations. Setting clear expectations is essential to building a productive relationship with anyone, and your boss is no exception. Though it's a two-way street, give your manager's priorities top consideration. After all, she's in charge. Identify what she wants from you and do your best to deliver it. Know what your manager expects. Your boss will want you to fulfill your key responsibilities, meet her standards for performance, and achieve objective measures of success. But you can't do any of that until you understand how she defines those responsibilities and standards and which metrics she'll use to gauge your progress. Ask her to describe what she's looking for in your work. If she doesn't articulate her expectations clearly, try writing them up and sharing that informal document with her to make sure you've captured them accurately. Then schedule a follow-up conversation or ask for written feedback, whichever your manager prefers. You'll want to revisit those expectations periodically in case they change. Every job and every manager-subordinate relationship is different, but most managers expect some combination of these behaviors from their direct reports. Offer ideas. Make creative suggestions for innovation or improvement. If you have an idea, err on the side of sharing it rather than squelching it. Manage your own direct reports competently. Coordinate their efforts, foster camaraderie, write useful and specific performance reviews, support their professional development, step in when one of them falls behind, and manage crises with skill and patience. When your boss needs to hear bad news about one of your direct reports, deliver that news yourself. Collaborate with peers. Work collegially with others toward your manager's goals. Overcome differences with coworkers, even if you dislike one another, with the aim of getting the job done. Lead initiatives. Raise your hand for cross-functional projects, particularly those that involve implementing new ideas. Make clear how your involvement is consistent with your manager's expectations of you. Stay current. Keep abreast of industry trends, marketplace developments, advances in technology, and other events outside the company that may affect its success. Bring your insights to bear on your work. Drive your own growth. Seek out professional development opportunities. This can mean taking classes or pursuing a degree, but it doesn't have to. You might simply expose yourself to new ideas and people or accept challenging assignments that enhance the value you add to your team and your company. Be a player for all seasons. Stay positive even during hard times. That will inspire and motivate your direct reports, your peers, and your manager. Managers differ in how much value they place on each of these behaviors. Tailor your emphasis according to your boss's expectations and work style. Set your own expectations. To meet your manager's expectations, you must set your own sights ambitiously yet realistically. That means identifying and sharing your and your direct reports' needs for direction and resources, as well as respecting your manager's limits in fulfilling your requests. Discuss all this in a face-to-face meeting and ask for feedback. By being explicit, you'll clarify your mission, stake out the boundaries of what's feasible, and show your manager that you are deliberate in your approach. If your expectations don't match your manager's, try to negotiate an agreement that works for both of you. See Negotiating with Your Manager later in this book. You must also set realistic expectations for those who can help you meet your boss's goal. Your direct reports, managers in other departments, customers, suppliers, independent contractors, and others inside or outside the organization. When collaborating with others in your sphere of influence, ask yourself these questions. How do they perceive my manager and the work I'm doing for her? Which of my manager's goals can they help me meet? What's the most effective way to communicate those goals to them? How can I best persuade them to help? What problems can I help them solve in return? You won't have formal authority over most people around you, just as you don't have authority over your manager. So you can use some of the same techniques to manage out that you've used to manage up. Offering ideas and solutions, providing feedback, and sharing reactions and perspectives. Meeting your boss's goals and expectations may require you to relinquish control and empower others. That may involve delegating tasks, even those that come with significant responsibility, to direct reports. It may also mean coming up with creative ways to share responsibilities with superiors, subordinates, and peers. In managing up, you're doing that kind of deft interpersonal coordination all the time and constantly getting better at it. But as you'll see next, there are limits in how far that skill will take you. Understand the limits of managing up. No matter how clearly you and your manager set mutual expectations, you won't be able to control every outcome. And when you can't find common ground, more often than not, you will be the one who has to give. The better you get at managing up, the more often you'll agree with your boss, and the less vexing compromises will seem when you don't. As the relationship gets stronger, the need for effort diminishes, but it doesn't disappear, nor does the power difference between you. Keep these basic limitations in mind. I can influence my manager, but ultimately, I am not in charge. My own goals are important, but my bosses take precedence. My manager sets more expectations for me than I do for her. I have more to prove to my boss than she has to prove to me. Reading that list may make you sigh, but two things should comfort you. First, the list is short, so the possibilities far exceed the limits. Second, you can greatly expand the possibilities by skillfully managing up. Communicating with your manager. Effective communication takes a deft touch when you're managing up. If your attempts to persuade are too obvious, they may not succeed. Yet you need to be deliberate in your approach. This chapter helps you walk that fine line. How to listen and observe. As you engage with your boss in everyday activities, try to identify the messages behind her speech and behavior. The words and deeds matter, of course, but the values that underlie them often mean more. Listening with a keen ear and observing with a sharp eye can make all the difference in understanding, not just labeling, your manager's communication style. Consider the statement, "My door is always open," which many bosses make to their direct reports. That seemingly transparent sentence can have a variety of meanings. Here are three examples. Rebecca. When she says, "My door is always open," Rebecca means it literally. To foster honesty and camaraderie, she wants people to feel free to approach her in person at any time. It invigorates her when a direct report has an idea and spontaneously pops into her office to share it. When a problem arises, she wants to hear about it immediately because it reassures her that everyone is working as a team. She bristles when people who come in to speak to her close the door behind them. Indeed, she worries that colleagues will see a shut door as evidence of hypocrisy. If Rebecca must talk with someone in complete privacy, she reserves a meeting room. Raul. Raul's open-door policy is one that he expects people to observe in spirit, not in absolute terms. The door to his office is open 90% of the time, but when a deadline is imminent, he shuts it so he can concentrate, especially if he's writing. He wants people to see him as easy to approach and always available. But he views email and team meetings as legitimate ways for people to reach him. If someone considered him a hypocrite for shutting his door once in a while, Raul would think that the person lacked common sense. Janice. Janice works in a cubicle with low walls, as do all of her direct reports, so she doesn't even have a door. To her, an open door is merely a metaphor for how colleagues work together. She doesn't want people to fear making mistakes, even in front of her. But she also places a high premium on giving folks the mental space to do their work quietly and to consider proposals deliberately before acting on them. She wants her direct reports to share novel ideas, but expects them to submit those in writing before asking other people to react. To Janice, an open door does not mean an instant response, a phrase that she often uses when describing slipshod work. As varied as these open-door interpretations are, at least Rebecca, Raul, and Janice give their employees something to go on. Some managers don't even have an explicit policy about how and how often to communicate with them. Whatever your manager's preferred style of interaction, you'll probably need to do a little investigating to figure it out. Start by asking yourself these questions. Is my manager a listener or a reader? Listeners want to hear information first and read about it later. Readers prefer to see a written report before discussing it with you. Does she prefer detailed facts and figures or just an overview? If she thrives on details, focus primarily on accuracy and completeness. If she prefers an overview, emphasize the clarity and crispness of the main idea. How often does she want to receive information? Your manager may always want to receive updates at specified junctures, or she may have different thresholds for each project, such as daily reporting on critical endeavors and periodic updates on secondary initiatives. Every exchange of information with your manager has implications for productivity. These tips will help you be more efficient. When discussing deadlines, use specific language. Pinpoint a certain date, even a specific hour if appropriate. Avoid vague commitments like sometime next week, ASAP, or as soon as we can get to it. Be honest about what you can and cannot handle. When you commit to an assignment, clearly identify what resources you need to get the job done. Explicitly identify your objectives each time you communicate with your manager. Ask questions to clarify what you don't understand. Inquire about opportunities for follow-up in case you think of other questions later. How to present problems and opportunities. One of your manager's main jobs is responding to news, both bad and good. She must factor brand new problems and opportunities into existing goals, plans, and workflows. You can help by following this process. 1. Describe the impact in clear terms. In discussing a problem, pinpoint how it affects your work and your organization's performance. In presenting an opportunity, outline the potential benefits. Explain exactly how solving this problem or seizing this opportunity will help you and your manager achieve your shared goals. Number 2. Identify your solution or approach. Recommend a specific plan, but also present other options. Outline the pros and cons of each possibility and explain why you favor the one you do. Number 3. Flesh out the implications. Do your best to identify everyone who has a stake in the matter. Give concrete examples of the risks and benefits for each stakeholder. If you have tested your solution or approach on a small scale, present the results and what you have learned from them. Number 4. Fine-tune your plan. Actively engage your manager in developing a final action plan to increase the likelihood of smooth implementation. Doing this will demonstrate your commitment to ensuring success. How to disagree with your manager. When you communicate with your manager, you're looking for common ground. If you don't find it, however, it's important not to panic or retreat. You may think that disagreeing with her will make her perceive you negatively or trigger a defensive reaction. But managers want to make better informed decisions, so they often seek other perspectives. Indeed, most of them report that they don't hear enough alternative points of view. To disagree constructively with your manager, show respect and understanding for her point of view, and demonstrate that you care about achieving the best result for the organization. Here are some ways to do that. Link your idea directly to your manager's and your organization's goals. This will show that you are motivated by a desire to collaborate and achieve shared aims, not to be contrary. Provide suggestions that your manager can act on, not just objections.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?